A reading from the book of Habakkuk. The oracle that the prophet Habakkuk saw. Yahweh, how long shall I cry for help, and you will not listen? Or cry to you, violence, and you will not save? Why do you make me see wrongdoing and look at trouble? Destruction and violence are before me. Strife and contention arise. So the law becomes slack and justice never prevails. The wicked surround the righteous. Therefore, judgment comes forth perverted. Look at the nations and see. Be astonished, be astounded. For a work is being done in your days that you would not believe if you were told. For I am rousing the Chaldeans, that fierce and impetuous nation, who march through the breadth of the earth to seize dwellings not their own. Dread and fearsome are they, their justice and dignity proceed from themselves. I will stand at my watchposts and station myself on the rampart. I will keep watch to see what he will say to me and what he will answer concerning my complaint. Then Yahweh answered me and said, write the vision, make it plain on tablets so that a runner may read it. For there is still a vision for the appointed time. It speaks of the end and does not lie. If it seems to tarry, wait for it. It will surely come. It will not delay. Look at the proud. Their spirit is not right in them, but the righteous live by their faith. Though the fig tree does not blossom and no fruit is on the vines, though the produce of the olive fails and the fields yield no food, though the flock is cut off from the fold and there is no herd in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in Yahweh. I will exult in the God of my salvation. Yahweh the Lord is my strength. He makes my feet like the feet of a deer and makes me tread upon the heights. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
The Lord be with you.
And also with you.
The Holy Gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ according to Matthew.
Glory to you, Lord Jesus Christ.
When Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately, saying, tell us, when will this be, and what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? Jesus answered them, beware that no one leads you astray, for many will come in my name, saying, I am the Messiah, and they will lead many astray. And you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not alarmed, for this must take place, but the end is not yet. For nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All this is but the beginning of the birth pangs. Then if anyone says to you, look, here is the Messiah, or there he is, do not believe it. For false messiahs and false prophets will appear and produce great signs and omens to lead astray, if possible, even the elect. Take note, I have told you beforehand. So if they say to you, look, he is in the wilderness, do not go out. If they say, look, he is in the inner rooms, do not believe it. For as the lightning comes from the east and flashes as far as the west, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. The Gospel of Christ.
Like the season of Lent, the season of Advent is one of anticipation and of expectation. And though we might not think of it this way, but also like the season of Lent, the season of Advent is also a season of endurance, a season of patient waiting. When it comes to the season of Lent, it's easy to see that, right? We're waiting, going through this time of suffering, Jesus' temptation, and then ultimately his passion, where he has to endure the crucifixion before we get to the glory of the resurrection on Easter Sunday. In Advent, of course, we are waiting for the birth of Jesus Christ, seeing the light of the world come into the world. But until then, not only are we waiting, we are also enduring too, although it might be a bit harder to see. But when we understand where this idea of waiting comes from, how it is in the scriptures that we've come to have this be the theme of Advent, we begin to realize that this is very much a season that causes us to pause and to ponder what it is that we are waiting for and how it is that we do this waiting. You see, the season of Advent is inspired by the history of ancient Israel. In this time period known as the exile, we've been talking about the season, the history of Israel ever since September, starting with Genesis and working all our way through. We've talked about the fact that the kingdom had been united but then divided. And last week, we talked about how it was that the northern kingdom of Israel had been taken away by the Assyrians, utterly gone. And now all that's left is the southern kingdom of Judah. But in 586 BCE, it too ends up being taken away. The people are taken into exile, torn from the promised land, and longing for the day that they could come back to the promised land, and longing for the fulfillment of a prophecy that there would be this man in the line of David that would lead them to victory once again. But in the meantime, they're waiting and waiting and waiting, and they're wanting things to be better. This is part of the theme of the season of Advent. And for us, we can see an introduction to this and some good instruction on what our attitude ought to be in this time of waiting from the prophet Habakkuk. Now, Habakkuk is one of the 12 minor prophets. Again, they're called minor prophets because their books are short. The book of Habakkuk is only 3 chapters long, and I'd invite you to consider taking a few minutes and reading it later this afternoon after this sermon is heard so that you can read it and kind of get the sense of what it is that I'm going to be talking about today. But Habakkuk's letter is not only, well, not really a letter, but his book is not just one of the 12 minor prophets. It's actually kind of unique on its own because it's very autobiographical. And what I mean by that is it records in it Habakkuk's own words, but it's also Habakkuk's own thoughts. It isn't a case like in Isaiah where Isaiah is writing and he's saying, I am proclaiming the words of the Lord. Here, Habakkuk is actually telling us exactly what he thinks, exactly what he feels. And he's actually having a dialogue with Yahweh. The book begins by saying that this is the oracle that he saw. So somehow Habakkuk had had some kind of visionary, ecstatic, mystical experience and had this sense that he was actually having a conversation with Yahweh. And that's what we get to hear when we read the book. And so when we start, let's get the setting right. First of all, it's about 600 BCE. So last week's sermon happened 100 years earlier. And here now, Habakkuk, as a prophet, is looking around and he's looking at Judah. He's looking at Jerusalem. And those first opening chapters that you heard Holly read say things like this: Oh Yahweh, how long shall I cry for help and you will not listen? Why do you make me see wrongdoing and look at trouble? Destruction and violence are before me. What Habakkuk is doing is looking at Judah and Jerusalem and saying, people aren't doing what they're supposed to do. The Israelites here are not living appropriately. Now remember, 100 years earlier, King Hezekiah had instituted these great reforms. He was bringing the people's attention back to Yahweh as it ought to be and so on. And that was said to be part of the reason why Jerusalem was not conquered by Sennacherib of Assyria. We talked about that last week. But here it is 100 years later, and obviously it didn't take. It is not good. Habakkuk is seeing all this stuff and he's going, God, when are you going to do something about this? Your people are not obeying you. They are not doing what they're supposed to do. How long do I have to keep looking at all of this evil among your people? And so then in verse 5, Yahweh responds. And this is what Yahweh says. Look at the nations and see. Be astonished, be astounded, for a work is being done in your days that you would not believe if you were told. For I am rousing the Chaldeans, that fierce and impetuous nation. God's response to Habakkuk? Yeah, I am going to do something about it, Habakkuk. Don't worry, but you're not going to believe it. Because here's what I'm going to do. I'm raising up the Chaldeans. That's an early term for the Babylonians. I'm raising up the Babylonians. They're going to come and deal with this problem. Yeah, the Babylonians, the guys that are out there conquering nations and defeating city-states. Yeah, I'm bringing them to Jerusalem, and the Babylonians are going to take care of things. And then God continues to talk about how fierce the Babylonians are and how they're unstoppable and they're like a wave across the face of the earth. And everything that the Babylonians are doing, Habakkuk is led to conclude, is going to happen to Jerusalem. And so Habakkuk's response to God's response is rather curious. And he starts off in the way it's written here, "Are you not from of old, O Yahweh, my God, my Holy One?" And he goes on, and basically what he's saying is, he says to Yahweh, what, seriously? You're bringing the Babylonians to defeat us Israelites? Like, yeah, the Israelites are bad. I said that. I pointed that out. There's wickedness everywhere. But if you hadn't noticed, the Babylonians are more wicked than we are. So how is this supposed to work? What are you doing? How can you do this? You're supposed to be a good God. What on earth are you thinking? And then in the beginning of chapter 2, he says these words, "I will stand at my watchpost and station myself on the rampart. I will keep watch to see what he will say to me and what he will answer concerning my complaint." And he's wanting to know how God is going to answer for himself about bringing the Babylonians on Israel. Well, what is Yahweh's response to Habakkuk's response, to Yahweh's first response? Yahweh says this, "Write the vision. Make it plain on tablets so that a runner may read it. Go ahead, put it in writing, etch it into stone, because it's going to happen." And on the one hand, Yahweh is saying, "I'm God, I'm in charge, and this is what I'm going to do." But he also goes on to describe something of a glimmer of hope, that there's something else behind this yet too. But Yahweh is not being really, really specific about it. But he just goes on to basically say, this is the way it's going to be. And this is the way it needs to be. He does go on and say, now don't misunderstand me, Habakkuk. I'm not going to let the Babylonians get away with this scot-free. Don't worry. They will have to answer for their own cruelty and wickedness as well. So they will get theirs too in the right time. But despite your protestations, they are going to be the ones who will deal with the wickedness that you have rightly identified in the city of Jerusalem, in the kingdom of Judah. It's going to happen. So go ahead and write it down. At this point, at the end, Habakkuk responds by saying these words that you might have heard if you've done morning prayer from the Book of Alternative Services. Habakkuk responds and says, "Yahweh is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him." What can we say? God is God and we are not. But then he leads into chapter 3, which is a prayer that is poetic, it is emotional, it is heartfelt, and we get to see into the depths of Habakkuk's mind as he prays this prayer. And he says to begin with, "O Yahweh, I have heard of your renown, and I stand in awe, O Yahweh, of your work. In our own time, revive it. In our own time, make it known. In wrath, may you remember mercy." And what Habakkuk is leading off with is he's done taking issue with what God is going to do. He accepts it for what it is. And his acknowledgement of wrath, well, that's really what Habakkuk was asking for in the first place, right? Because of the wickedness he saw in Israel. But now that he hears the Babylonians are the tool God is going to use, he's saying, please remember mercy in the middle of this. But the way his prayer begins is hugely significant. "Lord, I have heard of your fame, and I stand in awe of your deeds, O Lord." What he's saying is this. I remember reading about how way back when Israel was slaves to Egypt, God, how you, through Moses, led them out of slavery, bringing the plagues on Egypt, bringing them across the Sea of Reeds, and eliminating the Egyptian army. I heard about how it is that you led them through the wilderness to the Promised Land, defending them from the Amorites and other enemies. I remember reading about how through Joshua, they were able to come into the promised land and possess it and get all of their tribal allotments established. I remember reading about the period of the judges when different people would raid different tribes of Israel and you would raise up judges to defend them against those people, preserving your people. I remember hearing about the three great kings, Saul, David, and Solomon, who led the united kingdom of Israel. And even during the divided kingdom, I heard about Elijah's showdown with the prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel. And I heard about Elisha, who healed Naaman the Syrian of his leprosy. I have heard about all of these things. I heard about how 100 years ago, you did not let Sennacherib, king of Assyria, defeat Jerusalem. I've heard about all of this, but I've seen none of it. All I have is what has been written down before and what people have said. And so, God, would you do it again? Would you make it known in our day and in our time? Would you do something about all of this and do this mighty act of deliverance so that I could see it and be able to celebrate it as my ancestors have? And then his prayer goes on to highlight those things that God had done. But at the end of the prayer, Habakkuk says, "I hear and I tremble within. My lips quiver at the sound. Rottenness enters into my bones and my steps tremble beneath me." What he's saying there is at the end of his prayer, he is just recalling the fact that it is inevitable that Babylon is coming to Jerusalem. And as far as he knows, that means it's over for Israel. That means they're done. In this oracle, Yahweh has not given him a timeline. Yahweh has not promised him that there will only be a time of exile. As far as Habakkuk knows, at some point, maybe soon, maybe later, Babylonians are going to come and they are going to wipe us off the map. And so his last thought is trembling and fear, anticipation and expectation, not of something to look forward to, but something that he dreads. And he has to endure from this time until that day comes. Now, it's going to be 14 years later, but he doesn't know that. And so with that dread and fear and that acceptance that this is what life is going to look like, he closes by saying this: "Though the fig tree does not blossom and no fruit is on the vines, though the produce of the olive fails and the fields yield no food, though the flock is cut off from the fold and there is no herd in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in Yahweh. I will exult in the God of my salvation. Yahweh, the Lord, is my strength. He makes my feet like the feet of a deer, and he makes makes me tread upon the heights." And with that, the book of Habakkuk ends. It is this part of the story that we've just read that informs Advent for us. Yes, we know that there's a wonderful birth coming up 4 weeks from now. But the Israelites in their day, like Habakkuk, did not know exactly how it was going to turn out. All they could see is how things were getting worse. Beginning with Habakkuk's recognition that people aren't living the way they're supposed to in Jerusalem, but now on top of that, that Babylon is coming to deal with this issue. And he's afraid, and he's fearful. But the conclusion he comes to at the end is, "Despite all of this, I am holding fast to the God that I worship, the God that I trust. And he'll give me the feet of a deer, that stability, even on uneven terrain, to make it through this time." This is what speaks to us today. And part of what helps flesh this out for us is a verse that was found in the middle of chapter 2. When God is responding to Habakkuk and He's dealing with this concern that Habakkuk can't believe that God is doing it this way. God makes this observation, speaking of the proud ones who would be in Jerusalem just living the way that they want to, or the pride of Babylon because they're the strongest nation in the world. God says this, look at the proud. Their spirit is not right in them, but the righteous live by their faith. And so what God is driving at this point is he's encouraging Habakkuk personally, and by extension, anybody who would read his words, to acknowledge freely that the proud are doing their thing and they're getting away with it. But they have a spirit that is not right in them. So there's no reason why we ought to reflect the spirit of the proud. There is no way that we should try to live in a way that mirrors how they live. There is no point in trying to be just as proud as they are. And one could argue that Habakkuk was risking that by saying, hey, God, what are you going to do about all these bad people? There's a sense of spiritual and moral pride in himself. Look at the proud. Their spirit is not right in them, but he says, the righteous will live by their faith. Another way to translate that is to say that the righteous will live by their faithfulness. So what is it that Habakkuk is being called to? What is it that Jerusalem is being called to? What is it that we are being called to? We are being called to live according to a faithfulness to that which we know is right, to the one to whom we give our allegiance, to the one in whom we put our trust. It's the easiest thing in the world to point out what's wrong with it. It wasn't hard for Habakkuk to say, look what's going on in Jerusalem. It's not hard for us to look around and see what's wrong with the world today. Oh my goodness, is Putin going to pop a nuke and start World War III? What's going to happen with climate change? Can we get our act together and make that reversed at all? What's going to happen with COVID? What's going to happen even with this inquiry on the Freedom Convoy and the Emergency Act going on? There are opinions on both sides of that one. There's all sorts of things that shouldn't be the way that they are, and it's wrong. You know, the easiest thing in the world is to preach against sin. It takes no skill whatsoever. It's easy to point out that which is wrong in the world. But our calling is not to do that. Our calling is not to be ones who can just say, this is wrong and this is wrong and that's bad and oh my goodness, look at that. No, our calling is to live by faithfulness. Faithfulness to God and faithfulness to what is being revealed as to the way we ought to conduct ourselves as human beings. And so today, we can find ourselves waiting and enduring in this darkness. Because, yeah, we don't know if World War III is going to start. We don't know when the next variant of COVID is going to come out, if we'll ever get fully on top of this thing. We don't know if we will be able to reverse the trend of climate change. All we can do is continue to live through it as it comes. And no matter what happens, let us be ones who say, yet I will still exult in the God of my salvation. I will still hold fast in faithfulness to the one who has given me life. I will still hold on to that hope that there is something around the corner where everything gets made right. And of course, that's part of what Jesus and his disciples were talking about in our gospel reading today. When the disciples came to Jesus in private and saying, Lord, when is all this supposed to happen? And Jesus says, there's going to be a lot of bad things going on. There's going to be wars, rumors of wars, pestilence, plagues, famines, all this sort of stuff. He says, don't be troubled by that. This is what has to happen. But the day is coming when all of this comes to a conclusion. So don't be in a hurry to follow someone who's claiming to be the Messiah over here or saying that the Messiah is over there. Don't believe them. Hold fast, hold true, be faithful, and carry on doing what it is that I have called you to do. And so as followers of Jesus today, as we start our liturgical year on this first Sunday of Advent, let us recognize and embrace the reality that we are living in a time that has a lot of darkness. And we are enduring a season. But however long or short we perceive this season to be, let us carry on in the faithfulness to which we were called, holding fast to that one who loves us with an everlasting love, a steadfast love. And let us be one who provides a glimmer of hope to those around us, that we need not live life in despair, but in the expectation of something else at some point around the corner. Amen.